morning or good afternoon, whenever you're going to listen to this podcast. We are very pleased that you have tuned in to our podcast. What we want to do today is to discuss the most recent developments at the OECD level. And these developments were able to change the international taxation principles as we have not seen for decades, I would say. And if I say we want to discuss this, it is Isabel Berlin, Giorgio Maffini, and I, Stefan Rasch, and we are all from PwC. And Isabel, do you want to introduce yourself?
Thank you very much, Stefan, and also a warm welcome from my side. I'm PwC's global transfer pricing leader, and as transfer pricing is a very important theme in particularly the Pillar 1 proceedings, I'm very happy to join you today for the podcast.
Right. Giorgia, you want to take over?
Thank you, Stefan. Good afternoon or good morning to everyone. My name is Giorgia Maffini. I work in tax policy and transfer pricing for PwC, specifically in the UK firm. And I've joined PwC only a little over a year ago from the OECD, where I worked on the taxation of the digital economy.
Great. So I think we have the right people. My name is Stefan Rasch. I'm a transfer pricing partner based in Munich in Germany. And before we jump in, I think it is fair to say only if we look what has happened since 9th of October and even before that, beginning of the year 2019, we're seeing fundamentally changes on international tax rules on the ground, as the OECD is saying that the current rules are dating back to the 1920s and that they are no longer sufficient to ensure a fair allocation of taxation rights. So what they introduced is, after some kind of discussions over the summer, that we now have a Pillar 1 and Pillar 2 thing, let me call it like this. And I would hand over to you, Giorgia, if you can give a kind of overview, what is it all about on Pillar 1 and Pillar 2, that we get a kind of overview here.
Thank you very much, Stefan. So the project that the OECD is carrying out is, as we'll see, really a complete overhaul of the corporate international tax system. There are two pillars of this project. Pillar one is, in one sentence, about allocating more income to the market, meaning where your customers are, irrespective of whether the multinational group has a physical presence, a taxable presence, as of the Article 5 of the Model Tax Convention. And the revolution here is not only that we are taxing where the customers are, meaning that we are importing in the corporate tax system the destination principle, but we are going to do that using a formula. So the extra income that we will need to allocate to markets under the so-called amount A, will be calculated not using the ALP, but using the arm's length principle, but using a formula, essentially. So this is really the second revolution of what the OECD is doing currently. And then we have a Pillar 2. Pillar 2 is about a minimum tax. And there are two rules under Pillar 2. The first rule is called income inclusion rule, whereby the headquarter jurisdiction of a multinational, say Germany, will be able to tax the total income of a CFC, of a controlled foreign corporation, if that total income has been taxed below an agreed minimum effective tax rate. There is also a secondary rule, says that a market or a source jurisdiction will be able to deny treaty benefits, will be able to deny a deduction if the income related to that deduction ends up being taxed below an agreed effective minimum tax rate. And the important changes in the corporate tax system, more income to the market under Pillar 1, and an effective minimum rate under Pillar 2.
Thank you very much, Giorgia, for this summary of Pillar 1 and Pillar 2. So Pillar 1 basically is about a recalibration of the allocation rules based on a fairly mechanical set of rules. This is why you refer to amount A, B, and C. while Pillar 2 is more about minimum taxation. So here we are touching on the source versus residency aspects of the international tax framework. I have a question on the mechanical set of rules for you, Georgia. Amount A, you talked about a complete new allocation right. It's part of the premium profit, or whatever I could call it, from a company that is determined on a global basis. What will be the basis to calculate amount A? Because there is no such thing as a worldwide tax return. So how are we going to do this?
We think that the OECD has in mind, Isabel, to look at the consolidated audited financial statement for a group and use either the EBIT margin or the profit before tax over revenue or revenue, say, and use that profitability level and say if that profitability level is above an agreed profitability threshold, say 10%, then a share of the difference between your profitability and that agreed, say 10%, will be going to the market. And the numbers in this formula that I've heard are, say, 10% of the benchmark profitability will go to the market. Where that benchmark profitability, we don't know where the agreement will land. We have heard that some countries would like to have a benchmark profitability of 5%. Others, like the US, would be more comfortable with a 10% benchmark profitability. So this is a little bit how the formula will look like, and probably the multinationals' profitability will be determined looking at the accounts, at accounting rules. So not at tax rules, but accounting rules. Another, this is probably the fourth revolution in this overall OECD project.
Thank you for that, Georgia. And maybe a question for you then, Stefan, that is about the inclusive framework, because I can imagine that a lot of the attention is now focused on amount A, but amount B is about either a result determined based on an application of the arm's length principle or a kind of a proxy to fix a return for routine distribution and sales income. How do the inclusive framework countries are likely to look at this in particular? Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I think there are two things we should take into account. The one thing is, obviously, or at least I would say, it's a kind of charming idea to say we're trying to fix, if we look at routine returns, that we try to fix those under amount B. That's, I would say, a positive thing, because that could be for companies looking at these kind of activities be a good sign to say we have a fixed return for that, we can determine that. On the other hand, and looking, I'm trying to look at the inclusive framework countries, there could be very much differences between those countries looking at this. Yeah, we have a kind of routine distribution function here, but what are the differences if we look at a industry like the pharmaceutical industry, if we look like other industries, if we look like retailers? Can we really go for this kind of argument to say we fix a kind of routine return? And then obviously other countries like China, to bring in one example, we all know the UN transfer pricing manual and the chapter from China, which I really find interesting. They could really take a different perspective. Don't try to mix up things here, but if we think about this market premium thing, how can we factor this in? So what I do expect, in trying to answer your question, what I do expect from the inclusive framework countries is that they take very different perspectives on this. And I don't think it will be that easy to find a compromise by saying, okay, we have a fixed routine return for a distribution activity and there's always X percent. I doubt that a little bit, to be honest.
That's very helpful, Stefan. Thank you for that. But we're talking here about allocation of A to the market countries. But what if I am a country that is very well known for important R&D activity? So in other words, my question here is for you in particular, because you attended the public consultation meeting and you're also a partner in a country that is known for brain power, R&D and so on. If I have an A, do I need a B and a C? If I have a B and a C, do I need an A above of the B and C?
I think that's really one of the key points. And let me start by saying, if you allow me to argue about this amount A, you have mentioned countries like Germany or other countries where we have quite R&D activities. And that's my first concern overall, because when I was attending the OECD meeting, the OECD hearing last week on 21st and 22nd of November on Pillar 1, that all sounds rather easy. Yeah, right? We start with a global consolidated return, and then we extract routine returns, and we come up with something, and then we start trying to allocate under amount A, if I understand it correctly, for those countries, the market states, and for those countries where we have the IP residing. And so for countries which are very much driven by R&D, obviously there is much IP to be considered. I do have some concerns, actually, that we really find the right way to allocate this residual amount between these two things, the market states and the IP states. I don't see how this could be a formula approach, and I don't want to go back to BEPS and action points 8 to 10, but I think we have tried to bring in a couple of efforts in determining what is the right amount for IPs. And now we start saying, for this particular allocation under amount A, you know what, we do a kind of formulaic approach and say something for the market states and rest it for the states where the IP is sitting. And I do have some problems in really finding the right number for this. And if I can recur to what I've heard in the OECD hearings from different industries, they made some suggestions, okay, we should go for 5 to 10%, as George has mentioned. If I may ask a question, is it really worth to say we have 5 of to 10% of the residual profit that is going to the market state? Is it really worthwhile to have all this kind of exercise for having this 5%? And actually, that was a question which at least we've heard during all breaks in the OECD hearings. Is it worthwhile to go for this particular thing here in order to allocate 5% to market states? Is it really what the OECD was hinting for, what the countries are looking for, what the inclusive framework is looking for?
That's a very great remark, Stefan. And this brings us maybe to the question, to a question to Georgia about macroeconomic effects for particular countries. Any thoughts about that? Because I understand that the OECD's input on the economic effect of the contemplated measures is at this stage relatively limited. Any insights on individual countries already?
Yeah, Isabel, this is a very important problem for the negotiation on the OECD side, and economic, let's say, assessment of which countries lose and which countries gain from Pillar 1 and Pillar 2, we haven't seen anything for the moment. We know that some individual countries have carried out their own studies. We don't know what those numbers are, except for Switzerland, that has been quite public in revenues from corporate tax under Pillar 1. But we could make an educated guess and rely on some of the recent literature that has come out and say that G7 countries, with the exception of the US, will probably lose under Pillar 1 and or gain a little. Recently, some German academics led by Clemens Fuest and with an institution in France have published a paper saying exactly this, so that France and Germany will gain very little, if anything, under Pillar 1. Probably some larger gain, some bigger gain under Pillar 2, but also there a bit uncertain. So overall, we think that large capital exporting G7 countries, with the exception of the US, will lose under Pillar 1. And this explains why the so-called amount A, so the new taxing right, the new extra income that will go to the market, will probably be small if there is any agreement at the OECD. That amount has to be small, so that we lose little. Otherwise, there is no agreement, really.
Thank you, Georgia. And maybe, Stefan, interesting for you to know is that Chip Harter, US representative at the OECD, said at a public forum a month ago that he expects the impact on effective tax rate for US companies of Pillar 1 not exceed 1%, for the reason that there are quite some US companies, US headquartered companies, that are then having market facing activities outside the US. But there are quite some, well, also consumers in the US. If you have 340 plus million people, then you also benefit on the other side also from the amount A. So that was probably also interesting to mention, because he also added to that he thought that the arm's length principle would come alive and well. But that was about a month ago, and I think, Stefan or Georgia, you heard meanwhile some other rumors.
Yes, Isabel, this is breaking news from a few hours ago, and the French press reports Mr. Le Maire, France finance minister, stating that the US is pulling out of the whole OECD process. We don't know how whether this is really happening or not, but just to say that given the political and technical difficulties of this project, there is a risk that Pillar 1 and Pillar 2 will not find a political agreement. We all know that multilateralism doesn't work very well at this point in history. So this could be true also for the whole tax project at the OECD. But really, it's just press reports for the moment.
Yeah, if I may, just to point on this one, because if I can bring in the perspective of last week, I was very, at least when I've heard Pascal Saint-Amand at the OECD hearing, all people involved on that sounded quite ambitious at the one hand, but on the other hand, it seems like we are really on our track. We are really on track here. We are on our way to bring this in. There's a kind of strong political commitment behind all of this, and they were expecting we are doing this now. Yes, of course, we are going for the hearings. We are going to take into account what has been submitted in terms of the different stakeholders here during the process, but by end of January, so when the next time the inclusive framework is going to have its meeting and it's going to take a decision, that sounded quite straightforward. So they sounded really quite committed to that. But if I'm now hearing that from the last couple of hours, that obviously one country is going to think about whether to join or not, if the US is going to join or not, obviously that is a kind of deal breaker. Yeah? And I'm saying this with all respect, but if the US would not be involved in here, in this Pillar 1 scenario, I can't see how this should go forward. And in addition to that, I think also from last night, what we've heard that the US administration is going to think about to charge tariffs, given the French digital tax, I think there's quite some way to go, I would say.
So Georgia already mentioned the income inclusion. So in other words, minimum taxation, not yet anything known about the exact rate. In the annex, there is an example with a 15% rate, just for illustrative purposes. But it's interesting to see that already in the annex. There is nothing said in detail in the report other than a mentioning of the three other bullets under taxed payment rules. So in other words, the business relief for certain payments can be rejected. For instance, this can be an arm's length royalty, but in line with, for instance, the US rules on BEAT, base erosion payments in the US, there can be a denial of the deduction. The subject to tax rule or the switchover rule are also not covered. Switchover rule meaning that there can be a switch to a credit system, which can have very far-reaching consequences, obviously. And that would ultimately be a move in the direction of full export neutrality, if you wish. And that can have all sorts of consequences also. For instance, if you're in the EU, what about the consequences also from a treaty perspective? Because if I have an exemption system, I have to exempt as a head office the profits of a branch. But in case of a switch over, this will mean that there is a attraction of those profits to the head office? Well, in that case, we see an override of treaties. So nothing is said yet in more detail in the report other than mentioning this, the topic. Where the report goes in more detail is about, again, how to determine the effective tax rate. So you need to have a basis. And I was saying earlier, there is no such thing as a global tax return. Well, here again, there is a use of financials, and where financials are serving predominantly a different aim. And that was definitely something that we have submitted in our PwC response that was due yesterday, December 2nd, where we are saying clearly that an investor needs to read financials, because an investor has to assess whether he or she contemplates an investment in a company. Well, global fiscal income and profit is something else than that. So a lot of questions were voiced by the OECD in that context, and that was what we responded to. A point that was missing as well, and that's my last point here, is the interaction between Pillar 1 and Pillar 2. There is a belief, and that's maybe a bit of a provocative statement, but we put it in our reply anyway, is the question whether Pillar 2 doesn't come a bit prematurely. So in other words, shouldn't we first put all the emphasis on Pillar 1 and try to land on Pillar 1, particularly if amount A will stand, and then move to Pillar 2? But as we all very well know, the OECD has to work under a very tight schedule and needs to come up with a framework for approach already by the end of January if they want to commit to their plan to land by the end of 2020. Well, my question is, can we all do that in such a very short time frame? Over to you again, Stefan.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Isabel, for this overview. And I think that's really brings us to the end. I think you have raised a couple of questions at the end. I think it is really, one can really say it's quite a tight time scale for the OECD. I respect all this, but I'm not quite sure whether we will end up with a perfect solution. And what you've raised, I don't think it's provocative. I couldn't agree more. It would make quite some sense to go for Pillar 1 first, have it settled, and I think that's quite a thing to do already, particularly looking at the companies taking care of the compliance and all the stuff. We would have to talk about dispute resolution, but I think I don't want to make up this discussion right now. So what I'd like to do is to thank you very much, Isabel, Georgia, for this. I do hope we will rearrange and regather once we have some more light from the OECD inclusive framework decision by end of January. And I think it's worthwhile to say that we should meet up then. And I close it by saying, interesting times. Let's see what the US is doing, and then we will know much more, I think, in January. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Stefan. Thank you, Isabel.